In this week's parsha, Eliezer Eved Avraham says to his master, perhaps the woman will not want to follow me to this land, to Eretz Canaan. Ulai is written with above, as you would expect. When Eliezer Eved Avraham tells the story again, when he repeats it to Besuel and family, he says that he said to his master, Ulai lo seilecha ishacharai. And the word Ulai is written without above. And without above, it would typically be read as Eli. Rashi there quotes a Medrash, which says that Eliezer Eved Avraham said to his master, Eli, I have a daughter. You have a son, Yitzchak. Why don't we make a shidduch? And Avraham Avinu says to him, on the assumption that Eliezer is Mizera Kena'an, because he was an Eved, that Ata Arur Ubeni Baruch. If Ein Arur Misdavik Baruch. It's not a good shidduch, because you are definitionally, I think Avram clearly liked Eliezer, but definitionally Arur, and that's not a good shidduch if my son is a Baruch. Okay. Question that might be asked is, why is this Medrash here, or why is the Ulai here written Chaser Vav? That should have taken place the first time. When Eliezer is actually talking to Avraham Avinu is when he should have said Eli, and Avraham should have said, I don't think it's a Bishop. But instead, Eli, Ulai is written Chaser Vav only when he's repeating the story. Why is that? I've heard two interpretations of this. One of them, I don't remember which, was from the Kotzker Rebbe. I think I know which one. And both point to our capacity as human beings of self-delusion. The first teretz was that when Eliezer was in the presence of Avraham Avinu, he understood exactly who he was. He understood exactly who Avraham Avinu was, and he understood that this was not a shirach that made sense. But he goes to Haran, knowing who he is. And the first thing, Lavan sees him, he says, go, Baruch Hashem, come, O Blessed One of God. So Eliezer says, oh, they're calling me Baruch, perhaps. That's very Diana Baruch. And it's only then that it enters his mind, oh, maybe I should have suggested that particular shidduch. The second possibility is that when Eliezer spoke with Avram the first time, that was what he was really suggesting, but he didn't understand what he was suggesting himself. He didn't have the self-awareness. He had a certain blind spot, as you might call it. And only later, you know, he was suggesting that maybe she won't want to come. She married my daughter. He didn't realize that that's what he was suggesting. So then it's written, Ulai with above. When he tells the story over, it dawns on him the realization that really what he was thinking in suggesting this idea that maybe she won't want to come, what should I do? Right? He understood what really he had been thinking the first time. And he was no longer, in a sense, blinded. He had gotten a certain kind of awareness. If this capacity that we have for self-delusion is true when we are hedyotos, then it's a kavachomer if we rise to any position of prominence. The curse of CEOs, presidents of countries, of universities, and rabbis is that they are often surrounded by Bo Baruch Hashem sycophants. Sometimes these individuals and leaders are egomaniacs, or sometimes even worse, megalomaniacs, and they attract sycophants. Sometimes the criticism they receive is so much that the non-sycophants eventually get winnowed out. Because they don't have the patience to listen to those around them who tell them the truth. And so they're left only with these people around them. These two possibilities are reflected in two interpretations of a pasuk in Sefer Mishlei. Moshel makshiv al dvar sheker, kol mishar sav rishayim. A ruler listens to false things, all of his mishamshim are wicked. Ibn Ezra says that if a king listens when people speak sheker, then us, Yishar Sul Rishon, the people who will be attracted to the king, to the ruler, will be sycophants. They understand the opportunity. They're not interested in him. They're interested in themselves, so they tell him what he wants to hear. The Mitzudos, however, says that whenever a Moshe was makshiv al v'sheker, then all of his misharsim turn into rishayim, so that they should find favor in his eyes. And what this really means is that those who aren't willing to do that end up leaving. But the end result is the same, is that the Moshe, the Melech, is surrounded by what we would call in modern terms, yes people. And this is a very, very common problem in all sorts of organizations and places. This is relevant, as I said, for leaders and those around them. But it's also relevant in smaller units and families, and spouses in particular. Chazal, Gemara and Chelek, draw a contrast between Eishes Korach and Eishes Ohn. Korach comes home from the Levi hair shavings, all visiting. He's upset that Eliezer ben Uziel is appointed the Nasi for Shevet Kahas. Aaron and Moshe, okay, Amram was the Bechor, so his sons get two Gedulas, Kishayim, but Yitzhar is the next one in line. Uziel was the youngest brother. Why does Eliezer become the Nasi? Why not me, Korach ben Yitzhar? And his wife eggs him on, and she says, look what Moshe Rabbeinu did to you, and he did this and that, the other thing, and that you shouldn't fall. And Korach launches his rebellion. Ohn ben Peles, who is one of the ringleaders as presented at the beginning of Parshas Korach, but when you go to the end of the story, he's disappeared. Dasan and Aviram go down in the hole of the earth. Korach gets destroyed like that. Ohn is missing. What happened to Ohn? So the Gemara tells us that Ohn's wife said to him, listen, what's in it for you? If Moshe and Aaron win, Aaron's the Kohen Gadol. If Korach wins, Korach's the Kohen Gadol. You lose either way. You're not going to get it. So what happens to you? And he said, yeah, but what I'm going to do now, they're going to come for me because I'm part of this group, so they're going to come get me. So she says, I'll handle it. She gets him totally snatched. He's out cold, drunk. She goes and uncovers her hair and sits at the entrance to her tent. So every time Korach would send men there, they would say, a woman with uncovered hair, we can't go there. And by doing so, she saved her husband's life. This is true not only for a wife or a husband, this can be a husband for a wife. Very often you face situations in life where one particular spouse is upset about something, is angry about something, is engaged with something, and perhaps they're blinded by things that we all as human beings are blinded by. And it's the responsibility of a good spouse, of an Eishes Ohn, to correct their spouse's tendencies, to point out to them what the reality is. Not to tell them that they're right and they're perfect and everything they want to hear, but actually to make sure that when they're getting it wrong, they're hearing another perspective because they may not hear it anywhere else. Now, at the end of the day, the ultimate responsibility for these kinds of things rests not upon our rulers or our advisors. It doesn't rest upon our spouses. It rests upon ourselves to try to understand our capacity for self-delusion and to avoid it. And it's a challenge because as the Mishnah Nigayim tells us, and one I think is probably my favorite double entendre in the Mishnah, a person can see every flaw except for his or her own. What is called for is a kind of self-awareness. And to be self-aware, ironically, requires not being wrapped up in oneself, but rather focused on others. In general, contrasting perspectives illuminate. We all know what our own perspective is, but we're not aware, all of us, or not aware of all of our blind spots and biases. I think that this need for contrasting perspectives explains a somewhat perplexing comment of Rambam in his commentary to Mishnah Avos. The first of the two cases where it says Aseh L'charat, Paragalef Mishnah Vav, the Rambam writes the following, Aseh L'charat, V'afilu lo hayo ro'i li'os l'chalarat, even if he's actually not superior to you, he doesn't know how to learn better than you do. Abol simehu l'rav, you know,
Pray over the shir to him, and then you'll understand.
Because a person learning from oneself and by oneself is not the same as learning from somebody else. When you learn from and with someone else and you hear them, your learning will be yoser kayim and yoser mavua. It will more likely stand and it will be clear. And even if it's your peer, not your rebbe, or someone who's even lower than your stature. Incidentally, that's why it's Mikamida Yosemi Kula. True understanding comes from stepping out of ourselves or out of our own echo chambers and listening to what others have to say. Even if one is unpersuaded, it often helps us gain perspective on ourselves. While there are arenas in life in which we might not wish to be open to another perspective, our commitment to Torah and service to the Ribono Shel Olam, that should be the exception and not the rule. And even within that, most of our study of Torah, both halacha and hashkafa, should be subject to listening to other perspectives, because frequently, Torah is multivalent. It has been said that there are shivim pan la Torah, but not 71. And I think that's very important and true. But 70 is a lot to deal with. And if this is true with respect to Torah, how much more so with respect to Nidei Da'alma? We need to recognize our limitations and seek opinions of others. But it will almost always end. Listening doesn't need to end up with acceptance, but it will almost always end with greater clarity. And we need to make sure that the people we speak with aren't of the Bo Baruch Hashem variety, because living in an echo chamber never ends well. The Gemara in Arachin tells the following in the Sugya of Tochacha, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was contemporary Rabbi Akiva, said, Mein ani alai shamayim va'aretz. I can bring the heavens and earth to testify. Shaharbe pa'amim laka Akiva al yadi. Many times Akiva was smitten, I don't know what that means physically, by me. Shayisi koval olav lefnei Rama Gamliel. I used to complain about this and that to Rabbi Gamliel. V'chosha kein shahusif bo ava. He liked me even more. Don't rebuke a fool because he'll just come to hate you, but this is not listening. But a wise person should express what you think and why perhaps you think he's wrong, and he will like you more for it. Chazal tell us in the Gemara on Shabbos is emes. Unfortunately, the world is a place where emes is hard to find. As the Gemara points out, sheker, the three letters, are all next to one another in the aleph bays because they're common. MS are the furthest possible spread you could have, pretty much, of the letters. The first, last, and then is pretty close to the middle, because MS is hard to find. But MS, Chazal do tell us, ultimately stands, and that's why the letters of MS all have a wide base, whereas the letters of Sheker all stand on a point. Think about the shin and the tefillin, not the shin and the print. And those ultimately do not stand. The place to start is with ourselves, which means to be roeh negei atzma, and that requires listening and choosing the right voices to listen to, so that when we say ulai, we understand whether it has a vav or not, and so that when we encounter the Bo Baruch Hashem crowd, we know to ignore them. Shabbos.